kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you?
I like Dr. Pepper, Joe.
You like Dr. Pepper? Yes.
I like Dr. Pepper. It's delicious.
I do not have a Dr. Pepper tonight. I have a Mellow Yellow and a Cherry Vanilla Coke.
Okay, well, I will concede on the Cherry Vanilla Coke, but that Mellow Yellow stuff can just fuck right out of here.
Well, I like Mellow Yellow, so...
Mellow Yellow.
Like, as much as I say that Mountain Dew tastes like piss water, Mellow Yellow is definitely just piss water.
Yeah, pretty much. That's why I drink it.
Joe likes to drink pee. Confirmed. Next.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Mellow Yellow tastes like piss water at all. Where are you getting this crazy mantra from?
What, Mountain Dew doesn't like Mellow Yellow.
Mountain Dew isn't piss water. It's just caffeine. It's disgusting caffeine.
Sugar. Water. Like, you can taste the sugar crystals in it.
But what was wrong with that?
The throwback, because there's no sugar crystals in regular Mountain Dew. They use corn syrup.
Yeah, that's all chemicals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just tastes like caffeine. Straight caffeine. Nothing else.
I want to feel what's rotting my teeth.
By the way, it's a party cast. Chris Purnell and Aki are all here. How's everyone doing?
Well, apparently I want to see what's rotting my teeth, so it must be doing pretty insanely.
I are alive.
It's been a rough year, so it's fine to be insane right now.
But it's only
the second day.
it's only March 92nd.
Damn it, when you said it was only the third month, I had to fucking check. I was like, what? That ain't right,
is it? Is it? Is it? No. Yeah. Is it? Yeah. Maybe. Probably. It feels like it.
Like
what's really bad is my birthday is in the fifth month, and I know my birthday has passed, and I still had to fucking think about it. God damn it.
Oh, geez. Well, it is Tuesday night as we are recording. The world has gone to shit, and we are here to talk about video games.
Uh-huh.
So how's everyone doing?
Honestly, the video games help me feel better, so that's why I'm all about. Like, I've had people tell me things like, like the rest of America, I have a Facebook. And
I don't.
The world! But, like, people tend to have a feeling, like, they'll get on your case if you're like, I'm just going to post, like, ridiculous stuff sometimes. Like, you can't be doing that, man. Look, the world's going crazy. You gotta keep serious about it. Like, no, I don't. No, I really don't, because if I'm serious all the time, I'm going to truly lose my shit. So every once in a while, I do want to sit down and play some ridiculous video games and hang out and chat with my friends. Like, it's normal to do that. So anybody who's, like, genuinely getting that, I don't know what to do anymore, I can't take it, this world's getting stupid, step back from the news a little, get a little game time in.
And step away from Twitter. Jesus.
Oh, God, Twitter. Yeah, freaking quagmire that cesspool is. Ain't no time for that shit.
Well, like, everything I've seen today is, it is not time to be posting about video games or talking about video games, blah, 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 because all the stuff that's going on right now. I'm like, no, this is the best time to be talking about it, because all our feeds are filled with this shit. We need something that's not fucking, like, the absolute worst thing humanly possible.
Yeah, we need a distraction. That's why we're here tonight. We need a distraction from what's going on in the world. So we're here. We're here together. We're surrounded by friends. We're here to just talk and laugh and have a good time.
And eat sandwiches.
God damn it. Everyone smile.
Joe, are you saying we're friends?
Oh, no.
I'm smiling on the inside.
No, you're not. None of us are smiling on the inside.
I'm smiling on the outside, if that makes anything better.
I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to have fun and make friends.
and I'm all out of friends.
Very good.
And fun.
Guess you got to resort to the food and folks.
I'm here to chew bubble gum and make friends, and I'm all out of friends.
Somebody get chewed up today.
Oh, my God.
So how was everyone's weekend?
One of these days I'll develop a case of shame for the shit I shan't say on this show, but not today.
No, you won't.
You say my mom has watched a couple of the episodes.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And
the worst part is the first one she watched is the one where I was reviewing the sex game. She thought it was enlightening.
Nice.
My daughter's into what now? What is this nonsense? I mean, ooh.
Well, it's
my
not.
Daughter's a video game reviewer. I can't wait to listen to what she's been playing. Oh my God Almighty!
What happened to Mario?
Luckily, I did warn her beforehand that we were laid back and vulgar, and she knows me because I cuss all the fucking time. At all times. Course, that was the episode she started with, and I'm like, I can't do better or worse now.
We're already started at the bottom. It's all up from here.
No, we could do a lot worse.
We could. Aki, there's a Radaleika game coming out this week that you're going to want to get your hands on.
That and strawberry vinegar?
Yeah.
Something like that? Yeah.
Who's eating strawberries and vinegar?
I did. Well, strawberries and balsamic vinegar is actually good.
And you got the game, didn't you, Cole?
I did.
I can actually kind of see that being
there ain't shit you can't put in balsamic vinegar and instantly make it better.
That was honestly balsamic vinegar is what got me to like salad. I was one of those people who was like, you know, you don't win friends with salad. And then I was like, wait a minute, try one with balsamic vinegar. I was like, holy shit, you got a friend in me.
When know what made me like salad? All the hamburger that I put on top of it to make it edible.
What are you putting hamburger on top of a salad
just
for that
an
meat?
Entire cheeseburger.
It's called a hamburger or tacos. That's all. I just put more vegetables in my tacos than most people. That's all. Most people would probably vomit if they ate my tacos. I don't blame them.
I have to laugh about.
You know what you would do? You know what? But so you know what will make your tacos much better? You stick a huge pile of salad on top of them. That would make them
vinaigrette.
Yes.
Yeah. But you said that, you know, you don't make friends with salad, and then you like salad because of vinaigrette. And I spent years trying to convince number three to eat salad because, one, I grow a fuck ton of salad greens every year, and I need help eating them. So, and
makes sense.
And two, it's good for your kids to eat their fucking salad. But I always felt like I was like Thumper's mom from Bambi bitching at him to eat more than just the clover top. Like, you have to eat the leaves too. And I couldn't convince number three for the life of me to like it. I tried French dressing, which is how I got number one to like it. And I tried ranch dressing, which is like, who the fuck doesn't like ranch dressing, right? And like, she wasn't having that shit. And I'm like, I don't understand. And then one day I was like, hey, do you want one of my croutons for my salad? And she's like, yeah.
I love croutons. Oh my God, they're so good.
Because she would fucking eat a crouton, you know? But like, the crouton was covered. I was eating sun-dried tomato vinaigrette. And she took a big old bite of it, and then it dawned on me. I was like, oh, fuck, I have vinaigrette on there. And whoops. And she's like, no, that's really good. And like, now she'll eat salad with vinaigrette on it. And I'm going, the fuck kid won't eat ranch but wants vinaigrette?
I don't like ranch.
My kid.
Dressing,
yeah. So. Yeah. That's my kid. I keep bottles of vinegar in the cabinet, and I put it on like everything I get a chance to put it on. My love for vinegar knows no bounds. My husband hates it. So, like, if we've been bickering at each other or we're, like, picking at each other all day and we haven't fought, but we're just not friendly because that happens when you've been married for 20 fucking years, I'll guzzle vinegar before I go to bed.
Carl Ass is mean.
He gets pulling on my breath, and he gets so mad.
Like, baby, what the fuck?
I'm a vindictive bitch.
I'm trying to process that you just take a swig of vinegar.
I will straight up malt vinegar. Give me. Just down it goes.
Like, you don't like it, go to
vinegar.
You don't like it, go to a new holler.
Find you another holler to creep in.
This, what are you drinking tonight? Oh, I've got Coke. What have you got? Oh, I've got Dr. Pepper. What about you? Vinegar.
It's so good.
I tell you, know, my husband's in the doghouse too.
That poor.
I love vinegar though. I really do. And like, lemon, like cut lemon up in slices and just dip it in salt and eat lemons and salt. So good.
Lots what of people like fuck? That.
Yeah. No, I hear a lot of people eat it with sugar, but I like it with salt.
Well, you candy them with sugar, and then you put salt on them, and they're really...
No, no, skip the sugar. Just go straight for the salt.
You need the little bit of the sweet with the little bit of salt. It's good.
No, you don't.
That's why chocolate-covered pretzels taste so good.
I don't like pretzels.
There's something wrong with you.
I don't like salty foods, which is why it's funny that I like lemons and salt, because lemons and salt, watermelon with salt, and macaroni and tomatoes with salt are the only times like I'll actively reach for salt and put it on food, because I don't like it.
I don't use seasoning in anything I cook.
Aki! You're Asian!
Yes, but I have no sense of smell. I have no sense of smell. I can't taste.
Aki, please.
No sense of smell?
Yeah.
But smell is the best scent. Wait, no, it's not. I don't even know what the best scent is.
It is the only scent.
No, I was saying scents. I don't know anymore. But great Googa Mooga. Smell is the best scent. But then I started to question if that's truly the best one. I don't know.
I promise you, it is.
Well, I mean, if you had to lose every other sense but one, which one would you retain?
I would probably go for the sense of smell, because then you'd be able to taste, because they're directly connected.
I would,
but
keep
then you
vision.
Couldn't see. Yeah, vision.
I'm already fucking blind. The fuck do I care?
But then even your glasses wouldn't be enough.
Glasses don't help me. I'm blind.
Well, then you wouldn't be able to play any games at all.
Exactly.
Well, there's a
you can't
completely
smell games.
Blind guy who's great at Killer Instinct. I'm sure I'd find a way. I just wouldn't probably like it as much.
Must be his Killer Instinct that made him so good.
But I have no idea how he plays that. That is way beyond my understanding. But yeah,
no. How ironic is it has a character in it named Idol.
Oh, God. Of course, my brain was like, he's referring to Adol, but he's not. But I wanted you to.
Nah, so. Idol.
Oh, Killer Instinct. I sucked at that game, and it ruined so many game nights for me.
Never played
it. Okay, so I was good with, like, two characters, but I just could not commit to, like, the 40 moves, like, move list for everybody to learn more characters.
See, for me, it was all about Bloody Roar and Virtua Fighter. Those were my two.
I liked
quite the damn.
I had Virtua Fighter on the Sega 32X.
Nice.
You had a 32X? That is impressive.
I had.
I don't think I know anyone who's owned a 32X.
I don't own it now because it broke.
Two people that owned one.
Uh-huh. Be damned.
I think I still have mine at my family's house though, but we only had a whopping like two games for. Actually, no, we had one game for it, and that was Doom. And that game, well, it was Doom. I mean, it wasn't better or worse. It was just, hey, you got Doom on a home console. That's awesome.
I had Virtua Fighter. I had Knuckles Chaotix. And I had, there was a one-on-one fighting game with robots. Cosmic
Rise
Carnage.
Of the Robots?
No. Cosmic Carnage. I don't know
that one.
I would say I knew what this stuff was, but I'm not old.
I mean,
hey, we're not old either. We're quite young.
Young at heart.
We're old. We're dying.
We are young.
You're young compared to the, universe, maybe, but that's
probably not. Damn! No, that's cold.
Brutal.
I would rather.
To a galactic star, but, you know, or celestial star, but compared to other people, wow, you're pretty fucking
strangely,
old.
Strangely okay with this. I'd kind of rather not be there for the whole, like, development of, like, perhaps a planet with some kind of habitable atmosphere and single-celled organisms.
Oh, that part could be fun. You could actually truly appreciate how far we've come as a species, but having been born when I was born, I can't quite be as excited for that, because it's more like, you know.
Here's a story from when I was in high school, and it'll tie, I promise. There was a guy who lived just a couple houses down. He was mowing his lawn one day, and it got clogged up. So he lifted the lawnmower and unclogged it real quick with his hand, except for the dumb motherfucker never let go of the thing that was keeping the lawnmower running. So he cut off three of his fucking fingers.
Wait, that actually happened?
Yes. I am not proud of how far people have come, because people are still fucking stupid.
Yes, they are. It's like...
Yeah.
People would be like, why is it? What an innocuous example of the egregiousness of humanity. Big deal. Somebody cut off three fingers.
Doing
I move
piano.
Something
so
way
stupid.
Worse is going to happen to me down the line. Guy,
Chris lost his hand. Whoop de doo.
I'd be like, well, great.
Yeah, but because someone did something that stupid, I just imagine that there's some dumbass still in the fucking shower shampooing their hair because it says wash, rinse, repeat.
When do I stop?
Well, that's when we have all the frig. That's why we got all the warning labels out now. All because that guy wouldn't put his hand, keep his hand from underneath the mower without depowering it. He did this to us.
I'm not old like all of you guys. That shit's been with, like, that's part of the warning of the fucking lawnmowers and has been. Maybe when y'all were in high school, they didn't have that, but since I've been in high school, it was in there already.
See, when I was in high school, lawnmowers just said, instructions, go buck wild, mow that shit. That was the instructions, and it was amazing. They trusted us to not cut our hands off.
Being kids and having lawn darts that you threw up in the fucking air, and then they come right back down. And they had like a sharp metal tip on the end.
Fucking lawn darts. Oh, my God.
Do you remember?
Yes, I remember lawn darts. My friend in elementary school used to have lawn darts, and he took one to the head.
Yeah, I bet. Everybody that had him took one to the head. The whole concept of it was, here, take this to the dome.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
We didn't think shit through back in the day.
Jimmy McTillowugger, he just threw a dart and stabbed himself in the head. That was fun. Let's play again. I have. I didn't stab myself in the damn head with them. I threw them at
themselves in the goddamn head with one of them.
Can you just picture a child who's got this sharp dart? The dart, it's clearly pointy. There's a target across the lawn that you're supposed to be aiming at, and their first thought is throw it straight up in the air and don't move.
Yeah, kids are stupid.
Yes, they are. Because goddamn, Jesus! Just trying to picture some damn child who's just like, yeah!
And half of all stupid children grow up to be fucking stupid adults, too.
Stupid adults need the most attention.
Guilty is charged.
They said it was stupid babies, but no, it's actually stupid adults that need the most attention. It's upset.
Oh, my Lord. Speaking of things being stupid, we got some games to talk about. You guys ready to get into these?
Wasn't it like 45 games tonight or something?
Yeah, there's a lot, and we just spent 20 minutes talking about salads.
Well, we thought
stupid babies.
Yeah, salad and stupid babies.
No one started talking about tossing salad, so I'm just happy we didn't go there.
So let me tell you about this thing. Yeah, about this salad toss I was getting down with. Man, I can't even think of a way to word that without being like, whoa, that's over much. But what? I love how the worst part is that I said that, not realizing I could have just as well talked about actually tossing a real salad with balsamic vinaigrette. But I just jumped that concept and went right to the filth. What is wrong?
I primed everyone for it. My existence here primes everyone for that.
Yeah.
That is true. Gotta keep the dirty birdie alive.
So, yeah, video games. You guys ready?
Anymore.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Sega Ages Thunder Force AC, developed by M2, published by Sega, released May 28th on the Switch for $7.99. A remake of Thunder Force 3, Thunder Force AC marks the first time the popular shooter series found a home in the arcade scene. The long battle between the Galaxy Federation and the Orn Empire has reached the breaking point. As a last-ditch effort in their losing war, the Federation has created the Fire Leo O3 Styx, a highly mobile fighter wielding the same amount of firepower as a large battleship. As pilot of the Styx, it's up to you to secure victory for the Federation and return peace to the galaxy. Chris, tell us about Thunder Force AC.
Yeah. I don't need to. You just did.
Okay. How is it?
Nailed it.
Yeah. Okay, so Thunder Force AC. So yeah, the Thunder Force series is I guess best known maybe for 3, possibly 4. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's been all over the Sega Genesis and stuff, but like, you know, almost like Darius, the nomenclature is very confusing and, a lot of people don't really know what they have. So I'm going to try to explain, Thunder Force 1 and 2, both console Sega games were top down shooters where you had I think 360 movement, like, is basically like where you could turn around and stuff and like shoot things. Like the view was 360. And Thunder Force 2 had sequences where you went into side scrolling shooter mode. Well, Thunder Force 3 is the first in the series to go full on just side scrolling shooter. And, you know, a side scrolling shooter shmup, please see, Beaker Unloaded, the game on Switch, for instructions on what a shmup is, for an explanation that I don't have time to give because we talk too much about other stuff.
That's a lie. We didn't talk too much about nothing.
Yeah. So yeah, like Darius and Gradius, this is a side-scrolling shooter. So, and then after that, they had Thunder Force 4, which came out on the Genesis in the U.S. as Lightning Force, not lightning like that comes from the sky, but lightning as if to to take weight off of something. So, which, by the way, is also available from on the Switch, and that one's the one I know the best. So 3 was actually one I was not too familiar with, and yeah, basically 3 was the first one that got super popular. So they were like, okay, let's actually make an arcade cab like version of this. And that is Thunder Force AC. They added some extra content, kind of borrowed some bosses and levels from 2. Cause like I said, it has those partially side scrolling stages, and they threw that together. And then, just as a bit of trivia, they actually ported Thunder Force AC over to the Super Nintendo and called it Thunder Spirits because they couldn't use the full name because I think Sega owned it. So, yeah. So Thunder
Learning
Spirits
things today.
On the SNES is basically this game, but on the Super Nintendo. And because it was basically like it was on the Sega C2 hardware, which was basically kind of like, you know, not like the top end stuff. Like, it basically plays like a Genesis game. It's very, like, apart from the fact that it sounds like an arcade game, and it's, you know, it looks and plays just like something on the Genesis. So, you know, the only reason it's AC is because of the extra content, and like I said, the sound. And yeah, so it's basically, like I said, it's a shooter. You go through different stages, as your, ship, which is the Styx, I guess, like the band, Mr. Roboto band. And, which is funny because, like, the next, in Thunder Force 4, 5, and 6, the ship is called Rhinex, which makes me think of, like, prescription drugs or something like that. Ask your doctor if Rhinex is right for you. Anyways, so the whole thing about it is that, you know, you go through and you shoot, you have your regular shot, and you pick up power-ups throughout, and the power-ups are selectable by pushing the A button, you know, B button to shoot, and so you can scroll quickly through it. You can also, at any time, toggle the speed of your ship, of your actual movement. So if you're, like, facing a boss or something, and you need to make really precise small movements, which if the screen is getting crowded with bullets, that's a good idea. You can just do that by pressing the Y button and kind of, but it kind of scrolls like from 1 through 4, and you know, 4 of course lets you dodge, like, you know, zip all the way across the screen in like one button push, which is gonna end up, you know, ramming into a wall, of course, but anyways. And yeah, you just go through, I think, I can't remember how many stages exactly, but it's a pretty meaty game, and it's got these nice huge bosses, and the graphics are really, really nice. Like, it's just quality Genesis stuff. And you know, got a lot of the parallax scrolling and the swoopy background effects and all that other cool stuff. It's very pleasurable to look at, and of course to hear. So what the, of course, because Sega Ages never messes around when it comes to like porting games, they got, you know, of course, some extras over here. And, you know, anytime I review a Sega Ages, I spend about half the time talking about the extras.
Yeah.
So
M2 doesn't fuck around.
Yeah, exactly. So, what we got here is, you know, of course, the classic arcade mode. And as you play through arcade mode and some of the other modes, you unlock other ships. So, like, you can unlock an alternate version of the sticks, and you can actually even unlock the Rhinex. So that's actually kind of cool for, you know, longtime fans of the series, because that's a, you know, that's a unique thing. And each one, of course, has its own set of online rankings. So if you have your favorite ship, that's how you'll be ranked. It's against everybody else that used the same ship.
Nice.
The arcade mode has the old and new version. So the old is actually the Japanese, you know, arcade game, and the new version is just the international version. So it's actually still old. It's just quote unquote new. 4 levels of difficulty. You can pick your number of lives, which is actually pretty important. Of course, that's going to affect your ranking. 3 is the default, but the thing about this game is that when you put the, you actually don't, in the arcade version, get rich kid strats. You push the coin in mode, and it just gives you 6 continues, which is interesting. Yeah, so eventually you can get a hard game over and have to go back to the start. However, they did put in a more accessible, easier mode that they, not patronizingly at all, called kids mode, where different things happen. I don't actually know if you can rich kid strats this one all the way through, because I didn't play through the entire like mode that way. But one thing is for sure, if you get a bunch of power-ups, which, like I said, you get power-ups and different kinds of weapons, and, you know, each weapon gets powered up kind of individually, you lose all that if you die in arcade mode, or you just get set back in various ways. But in kids mode, whatever you collect is yours permanently. So if you get, you know, the best gun and then die, you still have the best gun and things like that. Like, they threw in like all kinds of stuff to make it easier without making it, you know, boring. It's for people who just want to have fun with a shmup. I mean, I don't know why they called it kids mode, for gosh sakes. But yeah, then after that, they have the usual, you know, dot by dot full screen display mode kind of stuff. They actually threw in a realistic rendering of an arcade cabinet, along with the scanline plus smoothing graphic display effect, which is forced. You can't make it look smooth. But I'm amused by this one. I actually played through a game like this. The thing I like about it is that it actually does create that kind of arcade CRT shadow, like where you see letters that like, kind of have like this little glow shadow on them and stuff. That's like they actually cool. Recreate that pretty well. Yeah, it makes the playing field of the game like so small that you're only going to want to do this in TV mode, but you know, it's amusing, and it's something you can turn on or off, who cares. And then after that, yeah, it has the soundtrack and a music player, and that's about it.
Cool. So $8 on Thunder Force AC. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely a must purchase for shmup fans. I mean, this is an excellent game, and of course it's been, you know, treated with the usual respect that one would expect from M2 and Sega Ages. So I say, if you're into Thunder Force or Lightning Force or Thunder Spirits, who cares? Yeah, definitely give this one a shot, because it is a shot. Get it? Because, yeah, it's an excellent entry in the series, and this is kind of the one that put Thunder Force on the map. So this is a very exciting release, and I highly recommend it.
Nice. Another winner for the Sega Ages franchise.
Heck yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Depth of Extinction, developed and published by HOF Studios, released June 3rd on Xbox One, 4th on the Switch, 11th on PS4 for $14.99. In a flooded future world, killer machines are plotting mankind's demise. As the sole defender of humanity's last government, only you can create the ultimate squad and save humanity in this turn-based tactical RPG with roguelike elements. Purnell, tell us about Depth of Extinction.
But it's actually Depth, but I don't know. My tongue hates this word. Anyway, Depth of Extinction is a game not too unlike that one Mega Man Battle Network style game I played a little ways back as far as like world traversal goes. But gameplay plays more like a turn-based, like you said, strategy RPG. So the idea behind this game is that you originally start out as having two character units, and your goal is to pretty much traverse the general sense of the plot by going to a world map and choosing a location on said map. And when you pick a location, it usually involves an objective, as in like, what is the purpose of going there? A faction, the faction being the type of adversaries you're going to find in that location. You know, like there's certain factions that are like more favored, like machines and like robots. There's certain factions where it's just like general pirates or mercenaries, those sorts of things. And then lastly is the reward for completing the entire set of missions. You might unlock new gear or new character class, or I don't know, just maybe even a new character, just depending on the mission. Or, of course, the general unlocking of advancement of the plot in the game proper. Now, when you pick one of these missions, the game will set you down, and it will have you choose who you want to send out on a mission. By default, you can send your two guys that you start the game with, but you can also spend money you may have amassed throughout previous missions or from what you get at the beginning of the game to hire mercenaries that come pretty much pre-built just to aid you on the mission. So, say, for example, you might feel like your team is in real need of a dead-eye sniper. Well, fortunately, as a mercenary, you already have that character class, pay the money, get them on board, boom, you're good to go. Now, mercenaries do level up too, but they're not as easy to level up. It could also not as ones you really want to work with so much because they cost money every time you use them.
Yeah.
But your main two characters, however, they are pretty much free to use. So you'll be pretty much doing the most with them. And they start out at level zero. Level zero being, well, exactly what it sounds like. They have no character class, a default gun, and no stats have been attributed to them. However, once you get enough experience in them by kills and combat, which I'll talk about in a few seconds, you will get the ability to advance them a level. And the moment you do that, the game says, choose a character class for this person. They are officially required to specialize in something. And there's about at least 9 character classes. You can unlock more too as you play the game. But each character class has a specific weapon type that it uses and a set of skills that you can get for that character class, skills of which are gained by assigning stat points to specific characteristics, like a typical game like this. Not like they're not like named like the usual, like attack, defense, or anything. Now in this game, they're called constitution and grit and awareness and a couple others. But when you advance skill points into those lines, depending on how far down the skill how far down that stat you go, you'll unlock, you know, the different character class abilities and skills that they would have. So let's say, for example, there's a character class. I chose the Wildcat character class for one of my guys. If I level him up twice in grit, he'll get access to a brand new skill, which doubles as like his critical hit damage. So it's pretty good that you might want to go for that. Get that grit up. Now, once you've chosen your mission loadout, your characters and all that jazz, equipment that you have available to equip them with, you're on the platform that you ever go to. And each area has a bunch of different nodes on it. You start out at one node and you're trying to get to another node at the other end of the map. And each time you traverse a node, it costs a fuel item, at least one or more fuel icons to do it. So the ship that you use to get around costs oil or fuel to pilot. If you go too far without, you know, replenishing your fuel from a local merchant event station or whatever, game's over because clearly you need fuel to pilot your sub. But when you decide where you want to go on the map, you spend the fuel, you go there, and then the game will give you an event. Sometimes it might be, like I said, a merchant that will sell you stuff like weapons or new mercenaries or helpful items or gas. Sometimes it might just be, most of the time it's going to be a decision that will likely lead you to combat, because this game is combat heavy. And if you do end up in a combat scenario, the game usually will have a variety of different, goals for that combat. It might be rescue this hostage, or loot the place, or kill all hostiles, or just sneak out, like sneak by. And what happens then is you'll dock. The game will randomize a layout for it, and then from the docking point, you have to explore outward to fulfill the objective. And as you go from space to space, you'll eventually come across adversaries who are hiding out on the map. If you see one, the game will usually stop right there. It will tell you, hey, there's an enemy present. And at that point, you are able to maneuver your guys around as best you can. And until they actually see you, you are still clear to make the decision that you want to make. But the moment you walk into their view of their range of vision, or you fire a shot in their direction, the heat is on and it's on the streets. And you will have to watch your ass, get ready for combat, and get, flanked up. And early on, the game is not too hard, like combat-wise, because you get a lot of decent options for combat. You can duck for cover, which means finding a station where you can kind of defend yourself and get low. It makes it that you're harder to hit as a character. Or you can just kind of go up in there and just rush guys and take shots at them and hope for the best. Kind of like how XCOM has it. But also like XCOM, every character has the ability to post up and set something called Overwatch, which allows them to just kind of wait and watch for characters to run in their field of vision. And if they do, they'll just start taking pot shots at them. Enemies can use it on you, too. It sucks when they use it on you, because especially if you're the type that likes to rush around levels, like, well, you're going to get your ass handed to you, because this isn't the game for rushing. You want to be methodical with your decisions. Now, as you get around, you're killing guys, and when they die, they drop items every once in a while, which you can scoop and pick up. Every once in a while, you'll also come across treasure chests, like in the form of safes. You can unlock those and get new gear, which you can then equip once you're done the map. There are two difficulties in this game, of course. One difficulty will make it so that if you finish a map, all of your characters will be fully healed up and you're ready to move on to the next location. Whereas there's another difficulty where it's more roguelike-ish, and if a character dies on the map, they stay dead, and it's very concerning where you want to be that much more careful about how you make your decisions, because it will be a lot easier for you to have a player wipe in the game. Personally, permadeath. I find... Yes, right.
Nice.
Permadeath and bring it back. Personally, I like the game. One hand, I could see it getting old for people if they lose interest in the combat, because the game is mostly combat. It is literally click a node, make a decision sometimes, go fight dudes. But at the same time, the combat in the game is very good. So, I mean, it's kind of like a lot of games of this stuff. Come to notice that a lot of these follow the light. I'm not sure what the genre type would be, because I don't want to say it's just roguelike. They're like, what's that? Almost like node traversal roguelikes. I might be what I start calling them now. But these node traversal roguelike games all seem to have that element. It's usually decision, point, battle, assess resources, proceed, and watch, rinse, repeat. But they always make the combat so good and enjoyable that that works. And I feel like this game has that bite to it, because all the missions that you come across on the map are randomized pretty much. The character classes, you can always try to build like a new loadout every time you play for your main guys, but the mercenaries you come across, and if you come across hostages, that's generally randomized. There's a lot that you can work with here. It's just a matter of do you get tired of the combat or not? And if you don't, I think it's a strong contender, because if you remember when you were like, hey, Pretty, want to review this game? I was like, it doesn't look all that appealing to me. I guess I'll take it. And then I started playing it, and once it's in motion and the music is playing, which, by the way, I don't know who did the OST for this game, unless that the name in the corner is actually saying who composed it, was like Kim Lightyear. But the OST in this game is baller. Like, legit fantastic. It will probably end up on the show at some point. I love it. And it is a large part of why I like this game so much. I enjoyed hearing the music as I played. It worked for me. It did the job. It did what it set out to do. And it deserves more credit than I originally gave it. It's a great game. And nice. I definitely recommend it.
Cool. So $15, your verdict?
I think it's worth that buy.
Sounds good to me.
It is good to you.
I love when you do that and you just get all thrown off.
It is.
All I'm right, like, next game to talk about is called Geo Rifters, developed and published by Busy Toaster, released May 28th on Xbox One for $29.99. The ground is your weapon in the fast-paced battle arena of Geo Rifters. Team up with or against your friends to punch portals, twist tunnels, flip lasers, and steal the ground from under each other, using a unique arsenal of weapons and abilities in this ground-busting adventure. Cole, we talked about this one on the last episode with Solomon from Busy Toaster, so how was the game? Did you like it?
We did. I actually did. I wish I had taken a little more time for the multiplayer aspect of it, and I just didn't have time to because I was so busy trying to get through the 300 fucking levels that Geo Rifters has. Like, every time I think I've made some progress, I'm like, no, look, another level. Keep going. as far as the gameplay goes, it's a unique take on a platformer where obviously you need to get from the left side of the screen to the right. It seems really fucking simple when you first start. And you're like, okay, walk across the screen. It literally just has you walk across the screen. You're like, I got this platformer. I know what I'm doing. And then it's like, no, but shit's in your way. And now you just have to move it. And I'm like, okay, but that's a platformer. Sometimes you move shit. But for Geo Rifters, the way that you move shit is that you literally reshape the level. You need to move layers of blocks. Sometimes you need to hit switches with ninja stars. Shit gets unruly really quickly. You're also not just dealing with the level itself as it introduces different kinds of enemies and stuff to have to deal with. Like you said, lasers and rifts, and it gets wild.
It does.
The whole concept of the game is pretty out there to start with. But it absolutely just, the more you play, the more it gets flipped. It's really inspiring to see how many different ways they fucked with this concept. Just, they just wanted to see, what if we add lasers? And you're like, cool, now I got a whole level full of lasers to get through. See you later. And it's neat that they didn't pull any punches. They were just like, whatever wild ass idea got thrown out at a meeting, they're like, yeah, cool, write that up, we're gonna do that.
Yeah, they went all out with this one, and when there's 300 stages, you can expect them to go all out with their ideas.
And that's given the price of the game, in a lot of situations, if you would have said, hey, I got an action platformer, it's a little twisty, you move the world around, it's $25.
$30.
I'd be $30, excuse me.
$29.99.
Yeah. I realized that the thing that I brought up had pounds instead of dollars.
Proud of you.
Yeah. I can't do that kind of conversion on the fly. but, you know, I would be like, that's a lot to ask, okay, for a platformer in this day and age. And it better really fucking rock my socks. But there is so much to do in Geo Rifters that you're like, okay, yeah. They earned the $30. It's far worth it just because you're going to be playing it for fucking ever.
You are.
And that's even without taking into consideration the multiplayer aspect. Like, I forgot there was a multiplayer aspect because I've been so wrapped up in just seeing how I'm going to get through each level. I will say that if I have to bitch about anything in Geo Rifters, I bitched about this in the interview. I was nice about it, but I'm going to hardcore bitch about it now. Okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Fuck timed levels.
Yes.
So much of the game is perfectly suited to be playable given the condition of my hands. A lot of Geo Rifters, I was like, okay, this doesn't bother me. I wasn't getting fatigued. I could play quite a few levels without any issue. But then I would hit a timed stage, and I just couldn't do it. And it took me maybe 35, 40 minutes just to get to a point in the first one where I was like getting close to beating it. Not even like, oh, I beat it. Just like, oh, I just have to run through it and fuck getting all of the crystals because it's not even doable. And then figuring out a path without trying to get all the crystals and still manage to get through it in the end time. There were points where I was like getting a crystal in each stage just enough to open the door so that I could book it out.
Wow.
And I would still almost not get it. I don't know why they put those time levels in there. I don't know. I think if they wanted a challenge, I think it would have been more of a challenge to make the door not open unless you had all of the crystals versus, and there are some levels that are like that, but they're few and far between, and most of them will let you out with just a majority of crystals. Or if you just destroy a majority of the enemies, those stupid butt flies that'll zap you. I don't know. I just wish that there was some other kind of challenge involved that didn't require speed.
Yeah.
I hate anything that involves speed in games. Like, let me do this shit at my own pace because fuck it, my fingers are crooked.
Okay? I agree. I like taking my time. I like exploring the levels, trying to get everything I can. And speed running, I'm not into speed running. Just let me take it at my speed, my pace.
You don't even have crooked fingers to deal with and you don't like it.
No, my I just have fat fingers.
And I'm just like, this is not fun. If they took out every one of the speed levels, the timed ones, I would still be like, yeah, this is a badass game and I really like it. So I don't know why they needed them. I don't know why they're there. All I know is I really fucking hate them. There's a variety of characters. I forget how many there actually are. I didn't write that down.
I don't remember.
Shit ton of characters to choose from. All of them have different abilities. Some of them can pull out large rows of blocks, whereas others can just like move sections up and down. They have their pros and cons with how they interact with the world, which is nice though because it gives you something to think about. Like, you can't just go in. The worst part was the first time you shift from one character to the other. And you're so used to grabbing big blocks and pulling them forward. And then you can't anymore. And you're looking at the level going, fuck, I'm supposed to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it just takes you time to realize that you can do things differently. And then you switch again. And you're like, son of a bitch. I don't want to learn new characters. I just want to grab blocks, move them around, get out of here, go. But it does keep you on your toes and it keeps you learning new characters so that you can get better with them. So that if you do actually remember that there's a multiplayer to try out, then you're not mad about it.
Nice. Well, Overall, $30 on GeoRifters. What do you think of it?
I do think that there's plenty enough content there. I think it's a really unique game type as far as platforming goes. I do hate the speedrun levels, but other than that, I think it deserves a buy it.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is Fury Unleashed, developed and published by Awesome Games Studio, released May 8th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. Fury Unleashed is a combo-driven roguelite action platformer. Each kill you score increases your combo, hit certain thresholds, and your damage resistance and healing powers will kick in. It's a game you can beat in one ultimate combo. Are you up for the task? Pernell, you covered this one a couple of weeks ago. Chris, you're checking it out on the PS4. What do you think of it?
Yeah, so Fury Unleashed. I don't remember Pernell's review, so sorry if mine doesn't correlate.
I'm insulted!
Well, like, damn, sometimes sometimes I take Pernell's review time to go, like, make a cup of tea or something.
Oof.
I mean, oof. Look, I like tea, what can I say?
I'm forgiving if it's for tea.
To keep himself awake because you put him to sleep, that's what I'm hearing.
That's
for I'm you. Instigating.
That's cool. So shots fired. I put myself to sleep during my own reviews.
That doesn't even make sense, but that's what makes you so great. You're like, I'll take the fall for myself.
So yeah, in the third level, you gotta
get this gun right. Got a gun. I give it a bite.
So yeah, Fury Unleashed. Chris, what do you think of it?
Fury Unleashed. Okay, so this, like they said, it's basically a rogue light. That is to say, it is a run-and-gun platformer that takes place in several small rooms. Now, before I make this start sounding like a Rattalaika game, it's a little bit more ambitious than that, of course. It's, for one, got amazing pixel art. It is very, very, like, it goes for the comic book aesthetic, and I guess it hits it. I don't know. I don't read comic books, but... It looks like hand drawn and also like kind of pixely, on the same go. It's interesting, but basically, yeah, you play a dude or lady whom you customize at the beginning of the game. Sadly, despite it being shown in the previews, you can't initially choose to be a skeleton. That was the main thing that sold me on this game, but that's okay. I just gotta unlock it, you know? But, so you are dropped into, the world, which is kind of randomized. I say kind of because there's usually, it's always the same, scene. Like the beginning is a jungle scene and, a fight against a bunch of skeletons that are, you know, magical and evil and stuff. And, you know, ends with a big giant kind of skeleton who is a snake. I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, so you basically, every screen or part of the like level that you're in is like a panel in a comic book. There was a game a long time ago called Comics Zone that this might remind you of. But instead of like jumping from panel to panel, like you're going through doors and things like that and such. But, when you push the map button, of course, it shows you like a comic book page and, all the panels that you've unlocked by traveling to them. And, whereas, you know, like I said, they're randomized, the kind of rooms they are, but they tend to have, you know, they have the same enemy groups. They have random, treasures that you can pick up, which are, you know, usually upgrades to your weapons, one melee and one shot. The melee weapon is a typical thing. You know, you just push the square button and slap enemies with a big sword or something. And, the shooting is actually done with the right stick. So it's a little bit like a twin stick shooter in that sense. Now this game is clearly designed for speedrunners. Like it even has a difficulty mode. The easy mode. Let me see if I can find it right quick. Yeah. So, the game is by default on hard mode, right? And there's two harder modes that are unlocked, which to me, I'm like, well, that would make that normal mode then, wouldn't it? But anyways, then they have easy, which is described as moderate Fury Unleashed. And, it's basically, it takes away the trophies and leaderboards, most of them anyways, but it actually, it says it makes the game easier, and it says you can, I can't find it here now. Dang it. Oh, well, it just says for people who want to stream the game and find it, harder, you know, like difficult to talk. You know what? I might be confusing that with the next game. I'll have to check that out. Anyways, whatever. It has. That's not the point. What? The point is that you're supposed to proceed through it quickly because when you defeat an enemy, it basically starts a combo, and the combo has a timer that goes down. And if you attack an enemy before the timer goes down, then that adds to the combo. And the more attacks you get in the combo, like I said, you know, the more damage you do, the better upgrades and stuff. And also, that's the only way to heal your health. As far as I know, there's, I'm sure there's some item drop or something, but I've noticed that there's not just health flying around in this game. You have a loadout, of health, and that, you know, fighting effectively is the way that you want, that you're going to get to, restore your health. So, and then there's the other aspect to it, which is, you know, what makes it a roguelite instead of a roguelike. And that is that, basically, as you defeat enemies and gather things and stuff like that, you get points. And those points are, you know, basically you gain levels and stuff like that. And the level stays with your character. And so, like I said, those as your character gains levels and gets skill points and stuff, you can actually, you know, you have a skill tree that you can go down and actually unlock different skills. And this game is definitely meant to be played over and over again because, you know, as you first start, you might gain a level, maybe even two levels, and get two skill points. You know, as you, you know, as every time that you get through, like, let's say the entire first chapter. And then, you know, it starts to slow down, of course, like it does. And I noticed that, like, you know, there's stuff that you can unlock in like 35 levels and, you know, beyond. So this is definitely a game that's meant to be played quite a lot. And you also get things like, you might open a treasure chest or talk to a person. There'll be like a person in there that's like, okay, if you can use this gun and take down 20 enemies with it, you get to keep it. That is to say, it gets added to your available loadout. And so you actually get to kind of play around with guns, and, you know, various other weapons, but you kind of have to earn them instead of just straight up picking them up, which is kind of cool. And then sometimes you do get a gun that's only going to be available for that game, like in a treasure chest or whatever. And you can, you know, if you open a treasure chest and there's a different gun in it and it's maybe better than the one you've got, or maybe not as good as the one you've got, you actually have the option to leave it behind and collect more experience points. So there's always an incentive to open a treasure chest, because even if it's something you don't want, you can convert it into stuff that's going to help out your character in the long run.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so it's got like these really interesting systems to it. It's really like the controls are good. It's really tight. And, you know, you got different things as well, like a ground pound and, you know, dashing through things and like, you know, an air dash and a double jump. Sometimes you can get it upgraded to a triple jump, which is insane. But you know, and yeah, like the whole point of it is just to either explore the entire chapter or just, you know, race straight to the end. I mean, you know, that it, apparently you can beat the entire game and keep one combo going. So it's all about like kind of getting used to the layout, you know, even though it's randomized, and then just kind of being able to defeat all those enemies in the screen quickly and, you know, try to get to the end.
Yeah. Well, $20 on it. What do you think?
$20. I mean, it's definitely got like that kind of Dead Cells quality, like, you know, where it does feel like a full game. And, you know, there's so much stuff locked away, including two whole difficulty levels. And like I said, dozens of levels. So this is very much, something that, you know, a game for somebody to want to like come back to. And yeah, if, I would say that that would in that sense be a buy it. You know, just for general action platforming type stuff. I mean, it does have storyline and things like that. Like I said, the art's good. Music's, pretty good. You know, I'd say it's on the high end of a try it, for most people, but if you are into like the difficult roguelikes and things like that, then yeah, it's a good one.
Cool. Purnell, any thoughts? Anything you want to add?
I think the game, honestly, I remember liking it quite a bit on the, when I was playing it on my review, cause I was reviewing on Xbox One, if I recall.
Yep.
And, the challenge is just right. And I like the fact that like a good roguelike that has you repeat the same levels and chapters, they do roulette through bosses that you can encounter on a run. So
yeah,
the boss you fought on the one run might not be the same guy you fight on the second one. There's about, I wanted to say there was like 12 total bosses between all the chapters in the game. And I do like that a fair bit, because even if you end up fighting them over and over again, you'll fight them in enough variety that it won't outright irk you. And it's not 12. It's 12 for the whole game, but it's specifically like three per magazine, three per comic volume that you can fight, along with some mini bosses that show up in the chapter sometimes too, that if you beat them, you'll get a pretty cool bonus, like as far as like a new gun, or it's a lot of ink which you need to spend at the various event stations and stuff that may be strewn throughout the levels. It's, I liked it a lot. It got me nostalgic for, like you mentioned earlier, also Comic Zone. I just wish that it had more comic-y elements. Like Comic Zone really went on the tongue, on goes on the nose while you rip pages off of the book itself and throw them at guys, for example.
Yeah, it's really cool. Oh, and I guess something I forgot to mention, because I didn't play it this way, but it does have couch co-op, so it's a two-player roguelike. That's actually nice. Really cool. Yeah, shouldn't have neglected that one. I was just like, you know, trying to remember whether that clip about this streamers is in there, and it is.
You found it.
You can hate your co-op partner in the event that your combo gets broken.
I wonder how that works. If like you have different combo counters or, you know, something like that.
I feel like by virtue of how the game designed, to have two different combos would not be a good thing. They probably share a combo, but due to how quickly you have to traverse the map to keep the combo going, even after upgrading the combo timer, you can't have your partner go, I'm just going to go left. Like, no, man, it's warped to the other. But, nah! You know, that's well, like, you ruined the combo.
And I feel like the combo thing really is kind of more of a late game jam because there are like upgrades in your character that you can actually increase the amount of time in the timer. So I'm like, I feel like once you get that up all the way, then that's when you can actually go through the entire game and like keep your combo up, you know?
No.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, anyway, next game to talk about is called Turmoil, developed by Gameius, published by Playdigious, released May 28th on the Switch for $14.99. In Turmoil, you're an oil entrepreneur during the 19th century oil rush in North America. Search for oil, get it above ground, and sell it for the highest price. Invest in upgrades to improve your digging operation and defeat your rivals to become the ultimate oil tycoon, or the ultimate oil tycoon, as Cole would say.
O-L-L.
No, O-I-L.
Ooh.
Pernell, what do you think of Turmoil?
Turmoil? Jesus. Oh, my God. Well, Turmoil.
What are you making a joke for? I don't understand.
Well, like Garfield's rival, Nermal. Turmoil is a game where you like Joe just said, you are an oil baron trying to strike it big, get that oil money, get that Texas T bolt built up. And the best way to approach this game and what I like about it is that it plays kind of like a video board game does, because the main game, for example, is a campaign and it takes place over a series of in-game months where each round you are competing against three AI characters who are vying for various plots of land on a map. And at the beginning of the game, everyone has a flat amount of money that they start the game with and no land invested in. So you invest in a plot of land, usually costs you about $2,000. You start with like $20,000. You pay $2,000 to invest in a plot of land. And then you take another like $2,000 of that to go and start working on that plot. When you go to the plot, what it is like a flat screen where there's a surface with like a flat surface, and there's a bank on the left side of the screen and a bank on the right side of the screen. Now, you start the game out with the idea being that you need to figure out each time you go to a plot of land or whatever, there's a couple of in-game months that take place. And during that month and period, those couple of months, your goal is to discover oil, drill for oil, and extract as much oil, and then sell oil as quickly as possible for as much money as possible. So earlier I mentioned the flat surface, underground, two banks, left and right. Your goal at the start of a level is typically to hire some people who have dowsing rods. You place them on the map. They walk left to right until they discover there's maybe some oil down below. You then have to build an oil derrick and then use that oil derrick to drill downward until hopefully it strikes oil. And if it does strike oil and the pipe from the oil derrick connects to one of the oil pockets, it will start pumping oil up to the surface. You then pay money to get transporters that will then carry the oil from the derrick to a bank, one of the banks. Now, as the game and the months progress, the value that the banks are willing to pay for the oil will fluctuate up and down. Your goal is to try to figure out when is the best time to sell oil to one of these banks and get it transferred over and make that money. But if there's a point in the game where you don't feel as though it's valuable or worth selling, because that's the name of the game, is knowing when to hold them and when to fold them. I see who you can. You're never going to fold them. Just when to hold them and when to sell them. Your goal at that point, if you don't want to sell at any point, is you can build a oil station, oil silo, to just kind of house oil until you're ready to just pump it all out and sell it at the right price. But of course, if you hold it too long and the period of time runs up, you'll end the stage with a cache of oil that you never sold. So there's an interesting little balancing act there too. And there's other elements to this game as well, such as early on in the game, you don't, it's easy to just kind of find oil, drill for it, and grab it. But later on, there might be rocks underground, which will prevent you from outright reaching oil directly, and then just stuff like that. But I'll talk about it a little bit more in a second. So at the end of the level, the game will tally up how much money you invested to go to the location, then how much money you made selling oil, and then reduction for any penalties you incurred from like oil spillage, because if you don't get rid of the oil quickly enough and it overflows, you'll get an oil spill, cost money to repair and redeem it. So it's not something you want to have happen to you. So at the end of a level, you go back to town. And while you're in town, there are a few options available to you that open up as the campaign progresses. You can upgrade your oil derricks to expand the width of the pipe so they can pump up more oil for you when they connect to an oil pocket. You can basically purchase the ability to have faster horses to transport your oil faster. You can buy a mole, and the mole will dig for natural gas pockets, or just not even natural gas. He'll just dig in general, and he might stumble across natural gas. And a variety of other different upgrades that are meant to either improve your actual oil digging prowess, your ability to search for the oil, or your ability to transport the oil or store the oil. You're upgrading all these different things. And then once you're done doing that for that round, you're ready to go to another plot of land. You go to the bank, or rather not the bank, you go to the mayor's office, tell him you want to bid for land, and then a map will pop up, that same map from before. When the map shows up, it will show all the locations that have been, you know, already purchased and dug through in the past. And they'll have a number attributed to them. The higher the number, the more valuable or more lucrative that spot was, which also means the more lucrative the spaces around that number will be. So now at this point, you're trying to outbid the other characters for these new plots of land that may be available. Or you might say, screw it, I'm going off and strike it rich in my own little zone of the map, which means you don't have to overbid anybody. You'll just pay to a flat cost, and boom, you're ready to dig for more oil. Overall, the game itself is not complicated. It's simple but effective, because again, it's a very laid-back style of game where you're just basically going through the motions of looking for oil and digging it up. But at the same time, it's just strategic enough, because when you are playing to win against the computer, and you are not going to basically, you're going to be kicking yourself if you're like, you finish a level, and at the bottom of the stage, they reveal all the different spots that were available once the level's over. And if you see that you were digging, you just missed a massive pile of oil, you're going to be kicking yourself for that mess, which means it has that element to make you go, damn it, I screwed up. But it's still enjoyable. It's a great little game. And if you don't want to do the campaign, there's also like the equivalent of would be a skirmish mode where you play just a straight year of gameplay on one map of your choosing. Each map has a variety of different effects. Like it might be just like all oil. Some levels will just have an amount of rock in addition to the oil. And of course, again, if there's rock, you can't drill through unless you pay a good like 700 and something bucks to upgrade your drills or your drills to be able to drill through rock. But otherwise, you have to go around the rock. There'll be levels where it has also, again, natural gas, which is another lucrative way to make money, but you can't mix oil and gas in the same pipelines. So it becomes a little complicated when you're building derricks specifically for one type of product over another. As far as my feelings on the game, hopefully I even explained it well enough, because it's a weird little title. But overall, I did find it enjoyable, again, because I came at it treating it like it was like a digital board game. Yeah. And in that capacity, I appreciated it for that. It was a fair bit of fun. I didn't look to see if there's like some kind of weird online mode that may show up as an available option in the event that I was able to connect to somebody locally, but from my understanding, this is a single-player game, so you won't be playing against your friends. You'll be playing against yourself every time. But it's still fun. It's a nice little relaxing game. It's enjoyable. I would like to have seen a multiplayer component where you're basically trying to beat each other over the head to outmine each other. I think that would have been pretty fun. But all in all, I think it's a good time. And there's also DLC in the game that came with it called The Heat Is On, which adds freaking like volcanic magma to the to the mix, which you don't want to don't mix oil and heat. That's not going to cut it too well for you. Nope. So it's not good, but it's a good game. I think it's a good time, and I think it's worth money.
Cool. So $15, your verdict?
I also think this is a buy, or at least a minimum of a try if you're not sure about the whole single player playing it alone bit. But I think it personally held over well for me as a single-player experience, too.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Eternal Edge Plus, developed by Righteous Weasel Games, published by Sadok LLC, released May 22nd on Steam for $14.99. Eternal Edge Plus is an action-adventure role-playing game following Cross, an age-old warrior who is trying to wake his lost wife from an eternal slumber. Only together can they defeat the Skeleton King. Chris, tell us about Eternal Edge Plus.
Okay, Eternal Edge Plus. Well, I took this one on because I was like, oh yeah, I remembered liking that that Switch game that I reviewed, which was Eternal Edge. And so I installed this one, started playing it, and was very surprised to find out that it's almost a completely different game.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, so if you don't remember from my review of the other game, it was basically a, I thought it was pretty charming, and it basically had, like, kind of Zelda-like elements, you know, running around and gathering resources and stuff and collecting weapons and breakable shields and whatnot, and, you know, just going through different leveled dungeons in an open world. But what the original had was, like, you know, it had this story of, like, this team, you know, these guys that, you know, he had Cross, but he also had, like, three other people. Sometimes you join up with them, sometimes not. And the whole thing was done in this very interesting, like, voxel style, which is, you know, 3D pixels. Basically, everybody looks like they're made of Legos. And this game has, you know, one of those things. So the graphics got changed. There's no more voxels. It is literally just, like, a cel-shaded, you know, 3D exploration game. It looks a lot like a kind of chibi Zelda. Like, not like Zelda, but, you know, like, kind of a chibi-fied, like, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
So it looks like that now. There's none of these other characters. You're still Cross, but now you have a wife, and, yeah, she's all Sleeping Beautying it up at the, beginning of the game, which is extremely Zelda-like, and, you know, and then, yeah, you have to go collect, instead of, you know, breaking four chains that, you know, keep the, Skeleton King's palace, you know, drifting between dimensions or whatever it is, you're supposed to, like, go find eight, like, cursed orbs or something like that, eight MacGuffins of some sort, and, you know, they're in various locations, and then once you get all those, then, you know, things proceed. So, or do they? So, yeah, you basically just get kind of kicked out in the world. You get to figure out most of the game yourself, although there are other supporting characters. They don't actually join you, but they kind of, like, they tell you what to do, and, you know, for whatever reason, they send you to go help out the army who's, like, fighting, the, basically, what used to be the Goblin Army in the original Eternal Edge now is, like, it's called something different, and they're kind of different. And so you basically take on little quests in order to gain experience points, which you'll need to level up, and you will need to level up, because if you wander too far in any direction, it's got this thing that Xenoblade Chronicles did where, you know, if you go in, you know, you're fine for, you know, the spots between where you start and where you're supposed to go tend to scale up normally, like, you know, level one enemies are here, level two enemies are there, and if you go into this camp now, the enemies are level three, watch out. But you deviate from the left or right from that, and suddenly it's a level 35 beast, a level 124 beast, and they're, oh, just gonna one shot. Yeah, and then they just one shot you. And the fun thing is, you might get warning that you're about to wander into these areas and get one shot by a dragon, Gilson B. Pontes style, is that if you're going into, like, basically it'll be like a beacon. It'll look like a light coming out of the ground, and it'll be like, warning, you're about to enter a level 5 side quest. And you're like, level 5, but I'm only level 3. I'm going to get killed. And so you run away from it. But if you proceed, then you get locked into, you know, a battle ring, and you have to fight. You have to meet some kind of, you know, criteria. It's not always just defeating the enemy. Sometimes it's rescuing people. And so you have to be like, you have to defeat the enemies, but not let any of these people die. And so that's harrowing. The fun thing is, though, if you completely fail a quest like that because you weren't ready, like, it took me forever to get this level 8 quest done where these robot baddies were fighting some soldiers that were, like, friends of the other soldier I had talked to in the camp I went to. And so, you know, I had to rescue them from a whole bunch of level 8 robot people, which the robot people, by the way, are in the original game too. And yeah, I basically got up to about level 6 and got, like, some, well, I got some really good items, but I'll get back to those. You know, I finally was able to do it because And the cool thing is that, you know, I failed it many times, but once you fail and then, like, you know, if you die or just save the game or reload the game, you know, if something happens like to pass time, you can just go and do the quest again and try it again with no consequence. So, you know, even though you failed to save the soldiers, they didn't die. They're just still captured and it's all good. So it has like a lot of things like that. And, you know, sometimes you can get into an area and sometimes somebody will just want, you know, oh, I want 5 pieces of fruit. And so you just go get them 5 pieces of fruit and you're done. And yeah, you kind of rely on these little side quests because enemies themselves really do not give you very much experience for the level that you're at. So if you're in like, you know, level 2 and you're fighting level 2 enemies, they might give you 2 experience points. Well, you need 300 experience points to get to level 3, my friend. So you can't just get it through grinding. You either have to fight things that are a little stronger than you, and that even, you know, like the goblin guards or whatever, like some of them gave me like 4 or 6 experience points. No, it's really all in the mini quests. And so, yeah, about items. So, like the other Eternal Edge, you do have the ability to craft items out of parts of things that you find just laying around, or, you know, you can chop down. And of course, enemies leave behind stuff all the time too. And if an enemy drops a weapon that you don't want, you can choose to destroy that weapon, and the game basically rolls for a kind of material that you might get out of it. So, like, if you destroy a spear, you might get like a piece of wood. You might get 2 pieces of tech powder, which sounds illegal, but actually it's really, really good for weapon making. And yeah, like there's all kinds of stuff that you can get that way. And the game will allow you to craft higher level items, you know, from the get go. And the thing is that, yeah, items have levels in this game. And if an item's level is way higher than your level, it's not like Diablo or whatever, like one of those kind of, or Baldur's Gate, I don't remember which Western RPG had this, but basically, like, you know, if your character wasn't a high enough level for a weapon, you just couldn't equip it. In this one, you can equip it, but the stats go down to kind of meet your level. So you have like this +77, you know, giant two-handed laser sword or whatever that you've just crafted for yourself, but you're still, and it's a level 15 weapon, but you're still level 5. So you equip it and it just gives you like +30, which is about on par with other weapons that you might get in there. So they do grow with you, but they don't get super powered until you're at the appropriate level. So that's really interesting too. So yeah, The things about this, and this is also the things that were tough about the original game, is that for one thing, you have a little bubble map, and that, you know, there will be a marker in one of the corners, it's a round map, but you know what I mean. There will be a marker somewhere on the circumference of the map, and you run towards it, but the game will not tell you how far away you are from that. So you're like, you gotta go to this place and go do this thing. You're like, okay, the place is on the map, and you start running towards it, and it just stays in one spot. You can look at the big map, but you have to access the entire menu, go over to quest, choose the quest that you're on, and then it will put the marker on the actual map in relation to you. They should have had just a button to do that in the game, in my opinion. And yeah, sometimes it was very confusing. Like, they sent me to a soldier's camp, and I was told that the soldier's camp would have a Starbucks and would have all the shops I needed. Funny enough, it does have a Starbucks, but they're called Moonbucks in this game. But yeah, the thing is, I ran to the spot on the map where I was supposed to, but it was an entirely different place. Like, the actual place I needed to go to was straight up this hill that looked like it was just going vertically, but apparently I could just run up the side of it, and, you know, that's where my quest was. So the game's not super good at telling you what you're supposed to do or where you're supposed to go, even though it has these systems in place. So, you know, it's a game that is very open, but it's also slightly uncommunicative. The other thing is that, I don't know what the word is. The other thing is that, like, so, you know, like I said, a big part of the game is running into enemies that are going to one-shot you and kill you. There's two things about that that the game really doesn't accommodate for you, and that is that it doesn't tell you what level an enemy is at until you're already engaged in battle. So you run up to and there are higher level versions of the same enemies you've been fighting. So that's another aspect of it. So it's like you run into like the floaty pumpkin thing that you fought at level one. Well, later on the map, there's like some that are like level four or whatever, but you don't know that until you start attacking them. And yeah, sometimes there's a big tell, like for instance, a giant dragon that, you know, is definitely going to kill you is not level one. But, you know, like I said, the game isn't helping you out here, even though they easily could. The other thing is that if you die, it's convenient because you get to keep everything that you picked up, right? So you don't miss out on any items if you die, you know, without saving. But the other part of that is that you can't save. You can't just choose to save. You can get to a campsite and use it, and that auto-saves the game for you. That's the only way to save your progress. And those are few and far between. They're usually located in like populated areas and things like that. They're not just out in the middle of the map. There's also a fast travel system where, due to a bug, sometimes you'll just get trapped inside of it.
What?
They're these like wells that you jump in, and they're and you know, it's one of those things where it's like as soon as you jump into it the first time, you can fast travel to it. And I noticed this was a reported bug on Steam. Sometimes when you warp to that well, you're just stuck in it and you can't leave. So, but that's the thing is that after they released this game, they did put it back into beta mode or whatever. Like they released it on the 22nd as a full game, and then they pulled that back and like. You know, I guess they're fixing issues on it right now. So I won't go into bugs too much because obviously they're working on them. And then, you know, another one for me was that it didn't work with my controller. The left stick worked just fine. The face buttons worked just fine. The right stick does not work. And that's your camera button. So I had to use my mouse and my gamepad at the same time.
Interesting.
To move the camera around. Yeah, I'm hoping they fix support for controllers, or at least my controller. But I do have a very expensive controller, so maybe that's further down the list.
Maybe
of like stuff to fix, but anyways, it's it was jarring that it's not the Eternal Edge that I actually like reviewed before, but this game is actually pretty good because, like I said, it's really fun to like you know, find the materials, put them together, you know, get a new set of weapons. It's very much like a kind of budget Breath of the Wild, if you will. So it kind of has that exploration aspect, and, you know, as long as things aren't too dangerous, at least you can run in there and grab some treasure chests or something like that. I mean, it's fun to explore it, and unlike the last game, it doesn't suffer from load times or, like, slowdown. The last one had really long load times and lots of slowdown.
Yeah.
This one works really, really well. Like, I turned all the things up, and, like, it didn't chug at all on my system, so it was very smooth. And yeah, I think there's a lot of fun to be had here. It's just got some, it's still got some hiccups.
Well, then for $15, what do you think?
I think it is a buy it for people who really like open exploration games like this and are old like me and are used to games not holding your hand on anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, it takes certain parts of Breath of the Wild and Xenoblade Chronicles, two extremely good games, and for 1/4 of the price gets you a little bit of the ways there. I do like the storyline. I felt like the original storyline was a little more compelling, but that game is still available on Switch, so just consider that a recommendation for the Switch version as well.
Cool.
I think it's a good one. I just think be wary of the bugs if you're going to purchase it right now. You know, maybe keep track of the page of it and maybe wait till it gets back to the full version that they initially released it as.
Yeah. Quick shout out, Trivium Champ dropped 58 biddies. Thank you so much, Trivium Champ. And then Carnage dropped 5 more. George, take it away. Dropping bits indeed. Wet pancakes, George. Come on, give us the wet pancakes. Where is it? Give us the wet pancakes. Give us the play the goddamn sound. Wet
pancakes!
Thank you, George. And Cole just dropped another 150 biddies. Cole, what the hell are you doing?
But all at the same time?
I know. I didn't break them up because that was a lot.
Thank you, Cole.
I know. But look how slow that one little pride bitty going.
Yeah.
It's so slow.
And it lands.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah. There it goes.
I was hoping settling that it would be heavy enough to at least knock a few out, but it didn't.
Yeah, but it's settling on the top, so that's good.
Oh, and can I make a really dumb clarification on my last review?
Sure.
I actually finally found the part where it says that the easy mode is for streamers. It's when you select the easy mode, actually play the game, and then pause the game to further tweak the difficulty, which it allows you to do. Then on that screen, it says this is for people who want to stream and still talk, or people who are new to the genre. So I did have the right game, I just didn't have the right screen when I was looking at it.
Gotcha.
And that just confused the hell out of me. Anyway.
That makes sense, but nobody listening to Fury Unleashed is still listening to this. So what are you going to do? And then call your gifting Trivium champ a sub. What's that about?
I did, but I think I got robbed. The kitty's not going to hit the book. God damn it.
Ah, well, you tried. It was damn a good it. Effort. You're a good effort. Bean.
I am a good bean.
So thank you for the sub. Pernell, take it away.
Fucking yeah.
That's right. Fucking yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. I'm right here.
He done forgot already.
Pernell forgot I have a sound effect for him.
No, I remember. I thought it was funny. Like, wait, I'm right here. I can just make a sound.
Well, then Pernell, give us a fucking yeah. Well,
now I don't want to. You sound like. Oh, my God. I like right. having sound.
Next game to talk about is called The Deed 2, developed by Pilgrim Adventures, published by Grab the Games, released May 29th on Steam for $3.99. Can you commit the perfect murder outside a brothel in 1930s Paris? A man recognizes one of the orderlies who had cruelly abused him when he was in a mental asylum. Some deeds cannot be forgiven. Aki, tell us about this one.
Well, it must be Christmas because you're about to get a present of a dead man in the house of the ho-ho-hos.
Yay.
Yep.
I'm on board.
Yeah, anyone who's like, yeah, I want to play this game, there you go. There you go. You just won. For everyone else, you're playing as Kenneth Miller. He used to be in a crazy home. And this guy, Frank, was an orderly who decided surprise butt sex and whippings were a good thing to give to kids.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you've apparently at some point gotten out of said crazy house and you happen to see him at the ho-ho-ho house. And you're like, well, I'm going to kill this cocksucker. He needs to die. And I support that. Fully. You go in and you realize, oh, he's only going to be here for an hour. So you have one in-game hour to kill this asshole or kill him multiple times if you want to keep playing. In other words, kill him multiple times is what I'm telling you. It's kind of like Clue, but instead of guessing who killed him and with what, you're trying to find with what to kill him and where. So it's a lot of fun. It's like reverse Clue. It's great. You have to talk to characters in order to learn more about them. This is mostly used in order to frame individual killer people for his murder. So you don't, you know, go to the guillotine. Yeah, it's usually good to avoid getting yourself killed. Yeah, just a little bit. You can even frame Frank, so making it look like a suicide. It's fantastic. there's four floors, I think, to the building, a basement and three proper floors. And there's over a dozen weapons, I think, you can choose from piano wires to scissors, a meat hook, a revolver, baseball bat, handful of other things. And literally everyone who's there can be framed for the murder, or you can get caught or get away without anyone being suspected of murder, just knowing someone definitely murdered him, but we don't know who, so you're all free to go because, well, this is old times. It's not like they had security cameras, so yeah. And that's generally the game. Each playthrough takes like 25 minutes. It takes closer to 15 minutes, actually, I think, to play an entire playthrough, the maximum amount. So it's pretty quick, but there's achievements for, you know, framing everyone, getting caught, and getting away without framing anyone. So you're going to be playing through it, oh, I think there was 9 or 10 times at least.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's a bunch of people you can frame, a whole bunch of people you can frame. And then, you know, after you're done with all the achievements, you can just go around and kill him in every room with every single weapon just because
Why not?
Yeah. That's what I did. I've easily killed him probably 80 or 90 times just because fuck him. But yeah, there's not a lot here to the game. I mean, it's pretty quick. It's fairly short. Once you know where things are, that's what they are. However, when you're talking to characters in order to frame them, at the end, a cop talks to you, and that's where you use this information. Every playthrough, you actually have to reobtain any information that you're going to use in that. So it's not just permanently there. That's the only real thing that's necessary to worry about. That takes up probably more time than any other part of the game, is just getting that information.
Cool. So overall, yeah. $4 on this one. What do you think of it?
I say it's worth it for $4 if you don't mind the, backstory. Otherwise, obviously, this isn't for you, but
yeah.
$4, yeah. I mean, I probably spent at least 2 hours in the game playing it, at least, probably more. So, yeah, I think $4, yeah, that's fine.
Cool. Sounds fun. All right,
it's next. Fun enough.
It's fun enough for $4, which is what we need.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Awesome P2, developed by Pigeon Dev, published by Sometimes You, released June 3rd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Awesome P2, next chapter of classic platformer game. Greedy P is back in the game, now with even more dark dungeons, deadly traps, and gold. Purnell, tell us about Awesome P2.
Would you call me?
You heard me.
Okay, then. Greedy P strikes again. Oh, I love that name. This is probably one of the quicker, easier reviews I've ever had to do. Greedy P is a 2D platformer, not quite Massacre, but still like a little bit more on the challenge than just casual, with the object being to traverse a series of levels one at a time to get from beginning to end. A variety of obstacles exist on each level, usually revolving around like bats and like bullets and gears and just random obstacles that just exist to be a jerk to a pea that can jump and run. So be that as it may. You're trying to get to the level as quickly as possible and collect all the gems on the level to get the best score on the stage. And that's genuinely the game. That is literally the game. Every level has that same formula. With that said, though, the game is a lot of fun if you're into this style of gameplay. I mean, the maneuver options that he gets are he can run, he can jump, and he can jump again while he's in the air. So basically a double jump. And that's all you need, because you'll be getting a lot of challenge out of like timing that double jump, timing your normal jumps, evading obstacles and the like, and getting to the end as quickly as you can. And if you die on a level, they kick you right back to the beginning of said level. So you're kind of running through the habit of just muscle memorying your way through certain areas of the level. But again, it's not so bad. It's very, death and respawns are very quick and snappy, so you never feel like you're waiting a lot of time to get another crack in a zone. Levels typically all end in a fairly short fashion. Like, I don't think I've beaten, had a level take me more than a minute and 30 seconds. They're fairly short levels.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I don't want to say that as to say every level is going to take you a minute and 30 seconds. I'm saying when you get it right, it's going to take you a minute and 30 seconds. Otherwise, you'll be spending some time on death till you get everything exactly as it needs to be. But I enjoyed my time with the game. It works. I should also mention, the music is great, and the Game Boy-esque graphic style is also very nice to look at if you're around during the spinach green era of video gaming on the go.
Been there.
It's just a good, Oh yeah, I still go back sometimes. It's weird how nice that worked. Obviously, I prefer color, but sometimes it feels nice to kind of go back to that aesthetic. This game did it. That Save Me, Mr. Taco did it. It's nice. It works in this game. Music works in this game. The gameplay flow is nice. Just gotta be ready for the death and retry. But then again, if you're into this style of game, you already know what to expect from that kind of thing. So nothing new there.
No. Well, $5 on Awesome P2. What do you say?
I'm gonna fuck it. Why not? It because I haven't said that in a while. And cool. I did that once.
Hey, works for me.
Well, fuck it. Why not? Do it.
All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Castle Pals, developed by Brad Urkilla, published by Radlake Games, released May 26th on PS4, 27th on Xbox One, 29th on the Switch for $4.99. One night, Kylie and Owen stumbled upon creepy castle Pooka Pick and decided to uncover its secrets. Nothing could possibly go wrong, could it? Chris, yeah. What went wrong?
Just 1K'd that tonight? What does that mean?
He got all 1,000 achievement points.
Oh, okay.
Carnage in chat said, Castle Pals just 1K'd that tonight. So he got all the achievements tonight.
Yeah, I got
two, but not tonight.
No.
Really? Where is the red gem?
I want to say level 5 of Act 2. And You know when you've got to push the two, you got to push the two walls so that you bounce that ball over and it bounces up on the little trampoline thing past the blade and knocks out the wall at the top, so that you can bounce up. If you bounce up that, you can either go to the right and end the level, or you can keep bouncing up and then go right again, and it's in that corner up there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I haven't looked at any guides or anything like that. That's the only one thing that I'm missing. Otherwise, I would have 1K'd it, too.
I found it on accident.
Or platinumed it. Yeah, I figured it was going to be like that, because I was like, well, there's three worlds and there's three gems. It's got to be one gem per world, and you just got to find it. Okay, so this game, whatever it's called, Castle Pals. So this is a, it's actually two flavors of platformer, actually, because you have two different characters here. I've already forgotten their names. Owen and who?
Kylie.
Kylie. All right, good.
I was about to say they had names.
I just now learned them. What? it's not. I think they might say in the intro, which is, it's just a very tongue-in-cheek intro. They're just like, well, because they're very wise, they decide to, you know, go into this castle and, you know, what could possibly go wrong. So yes, they are two completely different characters. Kylie is a girl with boxing gloves, and she can punch enemies, and she can do a, you know, moderate jump and things like that. And yeah, basically that's it. She can attack. She can actually take out enemies. And then Owen has a beanie that allows him to propel her up to places like a helicopter, which is realistic. But, you know, you basically do that like kind of like a P-winged Mario from Mario 3. You get to fly everywhere, but, you know, it has its own physics. And so, you know, obviously his stages, you know, each character is locked to a kind to each of their respective stages. And so you don't choose the characters or anything. It depends on which stage you pick as to which character you're going to end up playing as. And so the levels are very much designed with these characters in mind. And basically the idea is to get from point A to point B. Sometimes there's a flag in the middle because one hit from any enemy or obstacle is death. And therefore you either have to start the entire level over or start from the last checkpoint. And a bonus coin is awarded in each stage if you can beat it in a certain amount of time. The interesting thing is that you can actually, well, the one thing is that the timer, you won't get that coin if you use a checkpoint, because starting from the checkpoint obviously is going to mess with the timer. So, you know, if you hit a checkpoint and then finish the level, it's fine. But if you die, then, you know, the timer, you know, won't allow you to get that coin again. So, interestingly, this game has the ability to turn off the timer or turn off the checkpoints, so that you can be assured that every time you start the level, you're on the path to get that coin. And then every, you know, in it, there's three worlds and then one fourth world that is unlocked through finding all three of the hidden, you know, stones that we were just talking about that are hidden, I suppose, one in each world. That's I'm totally thinking that. But
no, I think there's only three overall.
Right.
They're not one in each world.
No, I meant there's one in each world.
Yeah, okay.
Three. Sorry.
I got you. You're breaking down the levels versus the worlds. I got you.
Right, right. There's three in total, and they'll unlock another world of challenging stages. So the whole thing is done in this very cute pixel art style. You know, enemies, not a whole lot of variety, but they don't need to be variety. It's more about the level design, and that's where this game really shines. It's actually, everything is really cleverly put together. I quite liked how the levels were. You know, every obstacle, you can kind of see your way through. Especially in Owen's levels, there's a bit more of a puzzle element. For instance, like there might be a shining ball of light that you have to manipulate in order to break down a wall and pass through it. And usually the way to get this light where you want it to go, you can't touch it directly because it will kill you. You have to push down like these blocks with a ramp attached to them, and then that will cause the ball to bounce in the direction that that the ramp is pointing, essentially. And, you know, so there's a little bit of setup involved, and then, you know, you can, like, set it up to do that. And then, you know, there's, like, jump puzzles, a lot of timing puzzles where, like, you know, you're flying up and, like, there's enemies in your way at a certain point, or, like, you know, buzzsaws on the wall, of course, because this is an old castle and that's what they have. So it's just, that's basically all there is to it. It's got a, you know, instead of an overworld, it's just a list of the levels, and you can select from, you know, you can replay any of them anytime you like, or you can, you know, go to the newest one. I kind of, the cursor on selecting those levels is a little annoying, because they're, like, all displayed as, like, buttons and things like that, and, like, when you move the cursor around, it, like, pushes the buttons, and, like, sometimes it's hard to tell where you're at. You're like, am I actually going to the next level, or am I, like, actually going to a different world, because one of the one of the arrow buttons, it's just one of those little things that's just slightly annoying. And then the only other major issue I ran into is that there's no way to, there are no sliders for volume, and the sound effects are way louder than the music. The music's actually really good, but if you try to crank that up, then every time you get killed, it's going to pop your headphone speakers. It's that much louder. And there's no way to fix it. The only option in the front of the game is choosing language.
No.
And even that's done in that same, like, I'm pushing a button style of, like, I'm like, am I on English because the UK flag is pushed down? Is that okay? Yeah, and as Carnage is saying in the chat, the fireball was shooting sound.
Dumb Carnage.
Yeah, exactly. when they show up in my chat, I say Carnage.
Carnage.
Anyways. That's funny. She didn't know you had just sang it, and she sang it, too.
Did she?
Yeah. Anyways, so, the fireball booming sound is very, very loud. So I would hope that they would fix that, but, you know, it's a $5 game, so what can you do?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. That's all there is to the game.
All right, so $5, your verdict?
Oh, yeah, this is good. It reminds me a lot of, even though it's not a platforming shooting kind of game, like, it reminds me a lot of Mutant Muds, which is one of my very favorite 2D platformers. So, I'm going to say I got good vibes from this one, and I think, you know, like any Rattalaika game, it's solid. And, you know, again, easy achievements. You don't have to beat the whole game to get everything. You only have to get that last, I guess, World 2, Stage 5. Which I think is its own achievement, too. So that actually makes sense that the last, the red piece would be in there. It's like, just get the red stone and the blue stone or whatever, and then, like, get to stage 2-5, and then everything else is, like, right there.
Yeah. So.
2-6, for the record.
Huh?
You have to do 2-6.
2-6. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
And then you're good.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Congratulations, everyone. We made it.
Yay!
Yes, hooray!
A clappy.
We're survivors.
Music, I'm going to play a little Maze Dude. He just put out a new soundtrack for Maze Quest 3. The game's not out, but the soundtrack's out, and it's good. So Jeez. We're going to play some music off of that, and hopefully Chris Getman, Maze Dude, will be on the show soon. I've been talking with him. He wants to come chat with us, so hopefully soon he'll be on the show.
Amazing. Good stuff.
I see what you did there, you son of a bitch.
Speaking of son of a bitch...
Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Oh, God. If anybody knows the secret to not going to sleep early, tell me. Tell me, please.
Insomnia. Not be old.
I want to be, young. I am young. Young at heart. Forever young. Some other song about being young.
That just shows how old you are.
Hey, those songs are timeless.